Hi, this is Tanya Domi. Welcome to The Thought Project, recorded at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, fostering groundbreaking research and scholarship in the arts, social sciences, and sciences. In this space, we talk with faculty and doctoral students about the big thinking and big ideas generating cutting-edge research, informing New Yorkers and the world. Dr. Jennifer Furlong is the Director of Career Planning and Professional Development at the Graduate Center. She arrived at the GC in 2013. Before becoming a career development specialist, Dr. Furlong earned her PhD in Romance Languages at the University of Pennsylvania and a bachelor's degree in comparative literary studies at Northwestern University. She is an expert in 18th century French literature, history, and culture. She previously worked at New York University, where she served as Associate Director of Graduate Student Career Development, and earlier at Columbia University Center for Career Education. She initially pursued her interest in career development at University of Pennsylvania, where she was Associate Director for Graduate Students and Postdoctoral Fellows. Welcome to The Thought Project, Jenny.
Thank you for having me.
When you arrived to the Graduate Center, you were given the task to establish a new Office of Career Planning and Development, a fulfillment of goals that were laid out in the strategic plan 2012 to 2016. As a matter of fact, you got here just a couple of months after me, but you had a pretty big job. And also part of your mandate was to increase and diversify the graduate professional prospects for careers both inside and outside the academy. So what did you do, and how did you get interested in this field? Because you have achieved a PhD in Romance Languages. You have an excellent educational record from your bachelor's degree at Northwestern, a really, really fine academic career, but you went into career planning. It's very interesting. So we want to hear about that.
Well, that's actually a little bit of a paradox, because I sort of fell, the Seinfeld phrase is, ass backward into career planning, which is at odds in so many respects with having a career plan, because I had no plan. When I finished my PhD at the University of Pennsylvania, a position had come open in the Penn's Career Services office, and I needed a job, so I applied, and I figured, like so many people who work in career services, that if this wasn't exactly the right fit for me, at least working in a career services office would expose me to many career choices, and then I could decide what would be a fit for me.
It's very practical.
So it did have a very practical bent to it in some respects. The University of Pennsylvania's career office had worked with Penn's doctoral students and master's degree students for years and years prior to my joining the office. I had wonderful mentorship, and there was wonderful leadership in the office. So I got into the field of career planning, enjoyed many aspects of it, enjoyed working with what at the time very much felt like my peers, the doctoral students, because I had recently graduated. Now I feel much older than the doctoral students that I see. So that's how I got started in the field of career planning. It wasn't a plan. As many people I know who are in career services say, no one at six says, I want to be a career advisor when
right.
I grow up.
Sure.
But it ended up being a fit for me for lots of different reasons. And I like working at universities. I believe in their mission in spite of the somewhat contested political landscape around higher education that we sometimes find ourselves in. So that's kind of an answer to your second question. Your first question was, I got to the Graduate Center in 2013 and there was no career office, and there had not been for some time. What did I do? Well, I started my work actually just by letting students know that I was there and I was available to meet with them, and then meeting with students, because I felt, I feel very much that the office that I work in, that I run, is at its heart a student service, and it should be focused on students and their needs. And in order to find out what the Graduate Center students were about, I wanted to hear firsthand from them what their problems were, what their issues were, what their aspirations were. So at first I just saw a lot of students, and then the other half of my time was scheduling the appointments, because I was the only person in the office, and scheduling appointments is a pain. And then eventually a graduate student joined my team, and then she became our scheduler, and she built our website, and I saw the students, and then we grew from there. So that's what I did to start the office. I had worked in two very large career offices, so I was kind of familiar with what a career office did and needed to do, and was familiar with things and questions that people were going to have or bring to me. And
yeah, you were at Columbia, and you came from NYU to the GC. Did you seek out this position? I mean, made a decision to leave, you know, a very well-resourced, you know, privately endowed university.
I had always, I occupy this weird niche, and that most of the work I do has been with doctoral students and master's degree students. You know, in higher ed, most of the jobs are focused on, or most of the staff positions, or many positions in our world are focused on undergraduate education.
Right.
Undergraduates, God love them. You know, I just, they're great, but they're not, working with undergraduates was never my passion. When I left the faculty track and realized I was never going to teach an undergraduate class again, I felt no particular emotion around that. So I had always had, you know, from the time I moved up to New York, the Graduate Center on my radar as a place where I might want to work in some capacity. And I would periodically look at jobs at the Graduate Center and think, well, none of those are really a fit for me. Too bad, you know, I'll look 4 months from now and see if anything else comes up. But as it turns out, when Matt Schoengood, the vice president for student affairs, was conceiving of the career office in partnership with the president and the provost office, he had kind of gone around and talked with folks at Princeton and at Penn and all these places. And of course, I know all these people, and all these people knew me. So they, the job came out, you know, it's old classic networking.
It's a network.
You know, Jenny, you know, you should apply for this position.
Right.
I know you're not wild about the work you're doing at NYU. It sounds like a good opportunity, and it sounds like you would be uniquely qualified for it. So
you literally launched this office and you put it together. I was looking at your website. You have a whole panoply of social media. You even have a podcast, Alumni Aloud podcast. I was listening to the most recent one, the last one of the semester. But, you know, you've been on this career track of working in career development and professional opportunities. And what have you learned about the changing careers and trajectory of PhD holders? I mean, that is an incredible degree to have. And for many years and decades, people went into the academy. It seems here, just from my own experience of working here at the Graduate Center and doing some work with the Provost, Joy Connolly, who's, you know, authored this grant, Mellon grant now, and they're going to really try to innovate and revolutionize and reform doctoral education. And it includes tracks on professionalization of development of skills. And these people are not necessarily going to enter into the academy. And we're very open about that here, which is unlike maybe what you see at Columbia, because at Columbia, sort of traditional, they want you to go into the academy. What's changed? Talk about how it's changed, and maybe in your view, given your experience here in the last 5.5 years, what's different, or maybe at the Graduate Center than at other places that you have been?
Well, I do want to say that PhDs doing other things has been a question or an issue for a really long time. I have a copy of the MLA's job guide from 1985 that somebody found here at the Graduate Center and gave to me. And in that, there's a whole section on careers outside of academe. What do you do if you can't find a job in your field as a tenure-track faculty member? So this is something that, you know, people knew about or knew could happen to people for a long time, but there was not a very sustained or national conversation about it. People who couldn't find a tenure-track job just kind of scooted off into other things and maybe didn't really tell their institution about it or didn't tell their department or their advisor. They just sort of disappeared. They faded away. What changed or what has changed? I think, first of all, this is a dumb thing to say. It's so obvious. The internet changed a lot of this picture because people began to tell their stories and their struggles, both with searching for a position as a faculty member and searching for work doing something else, however people wanted to define that.
Uh-huh.
That conversation became much more public in a way that it could never have been without this forum through which people can more easily share information and individual voices. So that was a big thing that changed. The faculty job market has always been tight. You know, people point to 2008 as kind of a turning point when it became tight and would show
the economy
fell apart
and
the faculty market tanked and never really rebounded is the kind of conventional wisdom around that. And that sort of once again pushed some of these conversations, particularly for people in the humanities and humanistic social sciences, to the forefront.
That's a very good point to address. You know, you see all these articles in the Chronicle of Higher Ed. You know, how do you defend humanities? How do you support humanities? It's a steady drumbeat in educational publications.
Right, and actually, it's Eric Ayo from Penn State has written some articles in the MLA's Profession and in the Chronicle. For this, just analyzing data and talking about why the crisis is worse than it's been before. And I think he's really smart, and I would really suggest to people that they look up his articles. So I think those are the things that have changed in sort of a national conversation. So now the professional associations that didn't really talk a lot about this, you know, the American Historical Association, the Modern Language Association, the American Psychological Association, some of the big science organizations are now talking about this. You know, where do our folks go? What do they do? How can we help them get to where they want to go better? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really useful and productive, although there's a lot of critique back and forth about, you know, should this conversation be about creating more opportunities for on the tenure track, or what, you know, where do we locate this? What's most productive? So that has changed. What do I see in my office for our doctoral students? I would say, someone asked me this question yesterday. I would say that the majority of our doctoral students want to give the academic job search a try. And they may be emotionally or professionally or both wedded to this at varying levels. For some people, it's one thing of many that they're going to try. For others, it's really in their heart that they have trouble seeing other possibilities and that this is what they want to do. So I don't think that is going to change. I think for many of our students, giving the faculty job market at least a try is something that's always going to happen. And then if they're successful, they can make choices from there. Did I answer your question?
You know,
I kind of just babbled.
I mean, that makes sense. And also, as somebody who has occupied different fields. Like, I've worked in government, and I've worked, you know, in Washington and also in the State Department, where having a PhD was highly respected and very useful. And as a matter of fact, in the policy world and think tanks, you want to have a PhD. So since I've been here at the Graduate Center, I've met many students. I've worked with a lot of them in my job in communications. And I've met many people who've gotten jobs in the academy, but I've also met some people that, one, for example, works at the Pew, you know, polling institute in D.C., and she used to do this work at the Center for Latin American, Caribbean, and Latino Studies, where she was doing the data. She was, like, in charge of the research for the data project. And so that's a great job. I mean, the Pew polls are, you know, they have their finger on the pulse of the American people. And there isn't anything probably more important right now than knowing what the attitudes and values of Americans are, given what we're all going through at this moment in the political context. So I see this at the Graduate Center. A student I worked with is now at the University of Alabama in a tenure track position. Another person who's done all this data visualization, she has a tenure track position. I mean, it's very impressive. And, you know, of course, I hear that the job market is tight. And I also see a lot of really talented people doing exceptionally well, and they're not in the traditional academy mm-hmm. position here at the Graduate Center. I've seen this. I've seen the process that people go through, because you get to know people because they're in school for a long time here.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So those kind of relationships, knowing about their stories and what they're doing is really interesting. And, you know, at a bigger place like Columbia or NYU, you don't necessarily see the career people that much. And you've been around. I've seen you around. And I see you talking to students. So I just wanted to get a sense for our audience to understand, you know, kind of what you're doing and what you're seeing. The other thing that you do that I particularly have appreciation for as a professional communicator is that you co-author a column at the Chronicle, and you've published a book, The Academic Job Search Handbook, with your co-author. And I just, tell me how you decided to start writing, you know, in the public square, literally, when you talk about the Chronicle of Higher Ed, which is equivalent to the New York Times of education writing for our audience members.
Right. So I talked about having good mentorship at the University of Pennsylvania in that career office, and my co-author is more senior than I am, and she brought me into the opportunity, basically. She had been writing for the Chronicle on and off for some time. And
Name is Julia Miller Vick.
Yeah, Julie Vick.
So everybody knows.
Yeah, so Julie Vick invited me to write with her as an experiment. You know, when you co-author something, your rapport with your co-author is very important.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's everything.
We had a good rapport, and I think when you co-author, which I really recommend that people try, it's actually a lot of fun to find someone that you can write with, it's sort of being able to fill in each other's gaps. So when you run out of steam, the other person brings fresh ideas, and vice versa. So we've written our Chronicle column back and forth for a long time now, and it's been a lot of fun. And the Academic Job Search Handbook, the same sort of thing. The fifth edition, we added a third author to have another voice, and also because it's a lot of work to do, to update an edition of that volume. So that's how I got into those. I mean, basically, good mentorship, being given the opportunity by someone, being open to the opportunity. It's fun.
Has it extended your network? I imagine a lot of people read it and Do people reach out to you?
People do occasionally reach out to us and say that the column was helpful, or say that the book was helpful. Joe Strauss from our music department knew the Academic Job Search Handbook before I even started at the Graduate Center. So gave me a built-in relationship with Joe, and I speak to his music students who are going on the academic job market every fall, and see a lot of students from music, learned a lot about music. It's slightly ironic because I am completely tone deaf, and those students are not.
And there's a great music program here at the Graduate Center.
There is a great music program here.
I think it's sort of a gym in the rough. People don't really, it doesn't have a lot of visibility. I mean, it should, because the students, I mean, they are incredibly talented. But I have a fondness for them. We talked about PhD students, and I don't want to overlook the master's students. Mm-hmm. Before we go to, you know, another discussion, I want to talk about the podcast with you and your social media. What's different, maybe, or how do you approach graduate students who are in MA programs? I imagine that some of them might be considering pursuing a PhD here at the Graduate Center or not. What's different about talking to master's students?
Well, I think probably the biggest difference is master's degree students are here for a shorter time. So they have no time to lollygag. If they are hoping that in a year and a half, 2 years, this graduate degree launches them into a new opportunity, they really have to do a lot of work, a lot of networking, a lot of strategy around their career to get there, whereas our PhD students are here for 5, 6, 7 years, right? So they, you know, even if they kind of just chill and focus on their coursework for 3 years, they've got another 3 years to sort of get their act together and make a career plan. I don't encourage that, but it's not uncommon, shall we say that. So the master's degree students have to be focused from day one. That's sort of the burden that's on them. And our master's degree students, I think, have a kind of broader, maybe social life kind of scope than our PhD students. You know, we have master's degree students who are coming to an MA or an MS program straight from undergrad. We have people who, you know, have spent 10 years in one profession and are hoping to use a master's degree to angle into something else. So that, while of course we have people from both of those kinds of, both of those camps in our PhD programs, it's a little, there's a little bit less. I sort of know what I'm going to get usually when I see a PhD student on my calendar, and with a master's degree student if I haven't met with them before, but
you,
it could really
know,
be coming from almost any direction.
I see.
That sounds bad to say. I know what I'm...
No.
There's a kind of typical PhD student who may have worked for a year or two after finishing undergrad, or may have done a master's degree student or a master's degree somewhere else, but the MA students tend to skew a little bit more broadly.
So tell us about the resources you have available. I mean, what kind of services do you provide at the Career Planning and Professional Development Office?
So like most career offices, one of the things that people most want is to come and meet with someone one-on-one and get their job documents reviewed, ask people questions about networking, ask people questions about where to look for jobs, ask people questions about, you know, here's my situation, what should I do? And we provide that, so we do a lot of one-on-one career advising in our office. We also do a lot of events, workshops on kind of the career basics, like writing a resume, interviewing, how to find your fit. And we host alumni events where we bring in alumni to talk about their careers and give perspective about how to get into that field, how to build a career in that field, whatever the field may be. So we do a lot of that. And that, I think, is what students expect from us. And I think that is just some of the most useful basics that we can offer.
That's all really important because it didn't exist before you came in the door, which is so incredible. And the other thing that you're doing is you have this podcast. Tell us about the podcast, how it came about, and is there like a continuous host or do different students host? How does it work?
So I have several doctoral students who work for me. And for a long time, we talked about how to create compelling alumni profiles for the site.
Mm-hmm.
Do we do a picture, then a transcribed interview? How do we feature our alumni? What do we do? What's the best way to do it? One of our students hit on the idea of doing a podcast. And at that time, there was a music student working in our office who knew a lot about
recording
and editing sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so this student, a very interesting guy, taught the other students how to record and how to edit the podcast content using an open source software. So that kind of put the kind of onus on my students who were really enthusiastic about this podcast idea because that is, they apparently can see, I only started listening to podcasts recently. I guess that should be embarrassing. I guess it just shows my age. But my students said that podcasts were like one way that they really got content and they would go jogging and put podcasts on their iDevice. I sound really old when I say stuff like that. So they went with a podcast, and I let the students kind of drive the production. And whenever I meet an interesting alum, or either in person or over email, just cross them in the world, I say to them, would you want to be willing to be on our podcast? And if they say yes, some people just say yes. Some people say, tell me more. Then I toss the name to the students. And we try to get students from all different programs so that we have broad representation of the Graduate Center. We just finished our first season. We'll start the second season in a few weeks. I had two students who were very busy over the summer doing interviews, editing podcasts, and getting them ready to go. So that our podcast always starts with the phrase, for Graduate Center students, by Graduate Center students.
Yes.
And that's very much what it is. It is a student-driven initiative, and they have a lot of fun with it.
It's very well done, and it's a great way to also keep your network in with alumni.
Mm-hmm.
That many times are really grateful for their experience and they want to come back and give and share. And people like to do that. It makes them feel good about their connection to the Graduate Center, I would imagine.
Yeah, people have been very receptive.
Well, I just want to say that this is a wonderful thing that you have done that's really important to the lives of students and their futures. And you're to be congratulated. We will look forward to hearing more about your activities at the Career Center. And I want to thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning into The Thought Project, and thanks to our guest, Dr. Jennifer Furlong, the Director of Career Planning and Professional Development at the Graduate Center. The Thought Project is brought to you with production, engineering, and technical assistance by Sarah Fishman. I'm Tanya Domi. Tune in next week.